Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. A country that most Americans don't think much about, and an immigrant community from there, is suddenly in the news on two fronts. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, the Democratic Minnesota freshman, who has been at the center of controversy for her use of anti-Semitic tropes, is not Palestinian or even Arab American per se. She originally came to this country as a refugee from Somalia. There is a gray area there, which we'll explore, as Somalia is part of the Arab League. In the colonial era, Italy and Britain controlled what is now Somalia. The other story in the news is the New York Times report yesterday that the United States is stepping up a military campaign in Somalia, killing more than 300 Somalis in airstrikes last year. It was the third year in a row of a record high number of deaths there by U.S. bomb. The targets are fighters for Shabab, an affiliate of Al-Qaeda. It's a U.S. war that's accelerating, and very few Americans know about it. Somalia is also one of the five majority Muslim countries in the Trump travel ban upheld by the Supreme Court last year. Historically, some of you know there was a U.S. military action to deliver food to Somalis during a famine in the 1990s. That was largely the result of a civil war, that famine was, and that in a second phase of that military operation, rebels shot down a U.S. helicopter there, the famous Black Hawk Down incident, in which three Americans were killed. The heart of the Somali-American community is in the Twin Cities area of Minnesota, and with us now from there is journalist and doctoral student Ibrahim Hirsi. He was a staff writer at the news website MinPost and is now working for his PhD in American history at the University of Minnesota with a focus on immigration. Last year, he was a recipient of the MLK Commitment to Service Award at the annual Minnesota Governor's Council on MLK Day in St. Paul. He has worked with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control in the world's largest refugee camp, the Dadaab camp in Kenya, and helped people there start a newspaper called The Refugee. Ibrahim Hirsi joins us now. Thank you so much for giving us some time today. Hello from New York and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
How many Somali Americans are there today, roughly?
In Minnesota, across the United States, it's said, a little bit more than 100,000 Somalis, but the majority of them live in Minnesota, especially in Minneapolis, and that number is considered to be a little over 100,000.
Why did a refugee
70,000? Sorry.
Why did a refugee community from a very warm country like Somalia concentrate in Minnesota of all places?
Brian, that's a very interesting question. Somalis started coming here in two waves. The first wave came in the late 60s and 70s and 80s as students. And as diplomats, because, Somalia had a very strong government at the time, and they had a vibrant embassy in D.C. So they would, a lot of the Somalis, and also there's another group who were military, who would go to San Diego in the Navy for the Navy training from Somalia. So those were considered the elites, obviously, of Somalis. And those came, here in the, as I said, late 60s and early 70s. Mm-hmm. And then the Civil War happened in 1991, and they settled here. So that's the kind of first wave. And then after the Civil War, from 1992 all the way to today, the largest Somali community has arrived. Initially, when the first wave of this last group came, they landed in places like D.C. and New York, and San Diego, where the the first wave of Somalis already had established. But all of immediately they realized that those people were, the elites, well educated here, and they were able to afford those places. And this last group, that came, not all of them, but many of them were not educated. They didn't speak the language, and it was very difficult for them to secure jobs in those big cities. Mm-hmm. So immediately in the mid 90s, early 90s, after a couple of years after they arrived, they found out that places like Wilmer, rural Minnesota, had meatpacking companies. And as you may know, meatpacking companies, don't require English language and job skills and degrees. So many of them, some of them left from San Diego and other places, and others, when they came to the United States, they immediately went to those rural Minnesota to work in meatpacking companies.
Maybe it's a trivial question in the scheme of the big issues right. that we're talking about, but is that an adjustment for people, the weather, or is it just the weather?
Not at all. It's not the weather. That's economy was the main reason, and after that, they just settled down in Minnesota.
Right.
But Somalis are, even in Somalia, we are considered quote unquote nomads, and many of them had, the moving around was just normal in mm-hmm. Somalia, and even in America, that's kind of the case. And they, easily adjust with, any kind of life. That was the same in Somalia, but also that's the same in the United mm-hmm. States, and also in the diaspora. There's a large population in Canada and in UK and other parts of Europe.
How about your own story? What's your own family's immigration story, if you care to share it?
Yeah, so just like many Somalis, when the Civil War erupted, we left Somalia and established life in Kenya, which is a neighboring Somalia. And, there we went to school there. Obviously, when you are a refugee in Kenya, life was very difficult. Especially we lived in Nairobi, and we were not supposed to be in Nairobi because we were considered quote unquote undocumented immigrants. But we were in the process of coming to the United States. And my brother, who came here before us, eventually sponsored us. And my family and I came. I mean, that process took a very, very long time, at least 4 years. I remember starting the process back in 2001, June 2001, and it wasn't until May 2005 that we arrived in the United States. And throughout those years, we were going through the process, repeating it again, because after every 60 months, the health test and everything else expires and you have to redo it again. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that was the September 11th happened and things got very limited. I mean, before that, there were a large number that the United States was bringing. But after the September 11th, that number was reduced to, like, I think 30,000 a year or around there. And we were one of those who got stuck in there. But eventually we made it here in 2005. And we made it here because my brother was already part of this, vibrant Somali population mm-hmm. In Minnesota. And I know that, everybody has been talking about Ilhan, but I wanted to say the Somali community here. Ilhan is not the only elected official. Obviously, nationally, she is the only person in Congress. Mm-hmm. But in Minnesota, there are now two Somali Americans serving in a state legislator. There is a city council member serving in the Minneapolis City Council. And there is a city hall, school board member serving in Minneapolis. And then there's also another school member serving Mankato, which is about an hour away from the Twin Cities area. So the Somali community here in Minneapolis are considered the most vibrant in the diaspora, not only in the United States, but also across the world. As I said, you know, those who are in Europe and Canada.
What do you mean most vibrant?
Yeah, in terms of politics, they are, you know, one of the most engaged and integrated communities in the Western world, and the number of people who were elected in offices in Minnesota shows that. But also in terms of businesses, you know, Somalis are entrepreneurs, and there are in Minneapolis, there are the largest Somali-owned malls and businesses than anywhere in the country. So in that, and also, you know, there are respected leaders, elders, and the interesting thing is whenever something is happening in Somalia, whether a president is getting elected or someone is running for an office, the first place that they come is Minnesota to say, hey, I am running for an mm-hmm. office, recognize me, or to raise money. Mm-hmm. So Minnesota is basically the hub of the Somali diaspora.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, my guest is Ibrahim Hirsi. He is a Minnesota-based journalist and University of Minnesota American History doctoral student who comes from and is talking about the Somali-American community with the congresswoman from there in the news because of the controversies around Ilhan Omar, and also this story about a U.S. bombing campaign on the rise in Somalia, and we will get to that with Ibrahim Hirsi. And listeners, if any other Somali Americans happen to be listening right now, we invite you to call and tell a little bit of your family story. How and when and why did you or your family members come to the U.S.? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Give us a little oral history of your family's immigration story if you would like to do that. You can also comment on issues in the news if you choose to. How do you feel about the U.S. military action there on the rise? Congresswoman Omar's rise and controversies. How is the Trump travel ban affecting your family? It's really a third story keeping Somalia in the news. Or anything else you want to say, 212-433-WNYC. I don't know if we'll get any calls, honestly, since there aren't, as Ibrahim was just describing, there aren't many Somali Americans in the greater New York area, but just in case, or anybody else listening to this from Minnesota or anyone else, we invite you at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Ibrahim, the Trump travel ban actually has not been much in the national news lately, but with Somalia, one of the countries, have you seen it change many people's lives since the Supreme Court affirmed its legality last year?
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that kind of hasn't been in the news, as you said. So in Minneapolis, there are a number of resettlement agencies that I've been covering over the years who have resettled the largest Somali population in the nation. And at least, you know, most of them are closing down their programs. And that tells you, because, you know, the reason why people are getting laid off or programs are closed is because people are not coming. And that has, a huge impact on the Somali community here. Like, you know, other communities in the past, immigrant communities and refugees in the past, Somalis still have community, family members in Somalia. It's common to have a Somali man whose wife is in Kenya or Somalia or in other parts of the world and want to be here. It's common that a Somali woman gets married or falls in love with someone in those areas. And they have kids, and there are citizens there who wanted to be here. There are Somali just workers, you know, who came here and wanted to bring their family members here. So all those people, some are not, you know, brought here, and those who are technically allowed to be here, the process is just taking too long, and you know, it has been very slow. So yeah, so the Somali community, you know, has the travel ban has had a big impact on the Somali community here. And that's something that, you know, people like Ilhan Omar, you know, Somali Americans, you know, elected people like Ilhan Omar and other folks. I don't want to say Somali Americans elected, because there are other people who elected Ilhan Omar and other folks. But Somali Americans, you know, were proud of the fact that Ilhan Omar is in Washington, D.C., precisely so that she could address issues like the travel ban. And there has been some movement, you know, around that. But unfortunately, that's not the main news right now that we are hearing.
Did Congresswoman Omar, who was only in the state legislature a short time before being elected to Congress, I understand, mm-hmm. have certain accomplishments on local issues that brought her to prominence among the various Somali American politicians, that she wound up being one of the first two Muslim women ever elected to Congress, both of them last November?
Yeah. I mean, when Ilhan Omar was elected, there were other, you know, refugees from Cambodia who also, you know, became the first, at least in Minneapolis. And those people didn't really get the, you know, the headlines. Ilhan Omar made the headlines, and her election was beyond Minneapolis or Minnesota. It was a national story, and people throughout the world, especially Somalis throughout the world, knew about this and celebrated her success when she got elected to the state legislature in Minnesota. And I think because of that, I mean, you know, she got invited to national shows like The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, and that gave her some prominence, I think. And the reason is, just 3 years prior to that, first Somali American got elected in the state legislature, in the city council, Minneapolis here. And the same way, I mean, everybody talked about him, but city council is much smaller, of course, than state. So it wasn't as crazy as when Ilhan Omar got elected. But yeah, I think because of that, you know, she made a name for herself. Immediately she started attacking Donald Trump for obvious reasons, because of the travel ban, you know, because of canceling the DACA. She became a very, you know, vocal leader. Much so than anyone who serves in the state legislature, especially when it comes to Muslim issues and immigration issues, and also, you know, the progressive issues in general, right. LGBT and all that.
And you know about the controversies over her language that repeats old anti-Semitic expressions, though it's certainly valid to criticize Israeli government policy. How do you see the community reacting to the national debate over her?
Yeah, so it has been very interesting to watch how the community has reacted. I mean, obviously, the Somali community is not monolithic. You know, they are the same way that white folks are, have different takes on her issues, the same way that Jewish community has different takes on her remarks. The Somalis have, you know, have different reaction to her remarks. One camp is saying, you know, this is a real problem, and she's the first person or the only person probably who's willing to really say the things, you know, that a lot of people have been avoiding. And it's good that she's saying this. So one group are saying that. Another group, you know, is saying, look, this is probably good that she's doing this, but this is not the reason why we elected her. It's not really, you know, Israel is not that important right now in our lives. In Minneapolis, we are having a lot of issues, you know, Somali Americans in Minneapolis, where, you know, which is the district that she represents, are having many, many issues. And instead of talking about that, we want to talk about things like, you know, the travel ban and immigration issues and family members who are stuck in refugee camps. And how can they get here? How can we bring, you know, them here? In recent year, I mean, days in Minneapolis, there has been, you know, some shootings among Somali young people, shootings that, you know, the police described as gang-related shootings. And nobody has talked about that. And it hasn't been resolved. And a lot of people are saying we want Ilhan Omar to talk about things that matter in our district, mm-hmm. and not necessarily things that has nothing to do with you know, with what we want to hear about.
Is it common for Somalis or Somali political leaders to be very identified with the struggle for Palestinian rights?
So Somalis are obviously, you know, Somalis are a Muslim nation, Somalis are Muslims, and they have been, you know, thinking and hearing about issues in Palestine way, way, way before they arrived in the United States. But also, you know, Somalis are Africans, they don't speak Arabic, so they're not Middle Easterns, even though they are part of the, you know, the Arab League. So it's different. I think the majority of them are feeling sorry for the Palestinians. They are talking about the occupation that's happening there. But when it comes to the daily life, the day-to-day lives, to their lives, I think people want to be focused on what matters to them. People want to talk about, you know, raising kids and, you know, so
healthcare, education.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I haven't seen a lot of people locally who are elected officials who talk about the Israeli and Palestinian issues. No, it's not really. I don't. You know, it's not common among the leaders, but among ordinary people. You know, Somalis are many, especially those who are progressive. You know, Somalis are now, you know, even within the Democrats, some are established, you know, some are progressive, and you can see that within the Somali community. So, and that's very interesting trend, because when Somalis first arrived here, it was more like Democrats or Republicans. So people didn't know the difference. But now, and if there were a difference, we just could see the broader national level. But mm-hmm. but it was hard to identify those differences within the Somali population. But over the past, you know, couple of years, you can even see, oh, no, we are established, and, you know, we are the establishment, and we are the progressive. And those who identify themselves as progressive are very vocal about these kind of issues, for the most part.
Let's take a phone call. We're getting one call from a Somali American other than yourself. Bakari in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Bakari, thank you so much for calling in. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Hi, Brother Ibrahim. I have a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, America being in Somalia right now, were they invited by Somalian government, or they invited themselves? One, I'm sorry, actually two questions. Number two, are Somalians concerned about American military kind of depopulating their people but killing them? Do they have a concern about that, or are they more worried about Al-Qaeda more than them losing their people by America bombing them?
Bakari, thank you very much. And just, I'm going to give our listeners, Ibrahim, a little bit of background on the questions that he asked. For people who don't know, the other big Somalia story in the news right now is the stepped-up U.S. bombing campaign against Shabab militants associated with Al-Qaeda. 3 years in a row of rising deaths from U.S. bombs. Over 300 people killed there last year, according to reporting in the New York Times. yesterday, even as President Trump talks about scaling back U.S. military involvement elsewhere. So to Bakari's second question first, is that something that people in the community are talking much about in Minnesota and other Somali-American community hubs that you may know mm-hmm. of or feel strongly about either way?
Yeah, so this is very interesting because no, actually, a lot of people have not been talking about these airstrikes. The only time that I heard people talk about is when there is a civilian casualties that makes it to the news. You know, when we hear people, kids, women who had nothing to do with this were killed, whether it's drones or actual airstrikes, that's when, you know, we hear about it. But a lot of times these are happening in remote places in Somalia, and the communication there is probably not as good as what would happen in Mogadishu and other bigger cities. So apparently we have not been hearing about these issues. We hear a lot when Al-Shabaab does something, whether it's suicide bombing or just an actual attack, whether it's in Kenya, mm-hmm. which happened a couple of weeks ago, or in Mogadishu or in other parts of Somalia. So there's a lot of talk about what Al-Shabaab does and very little talk about what the U.S. does. And I think because when these strikes happen, the U.S. has reports, and those reports are usually, oh, Al-Shabaab, you know, got killed, or Al-Shabaab were targeted, members of Al-Shabaab were killed. And that kind of overpowers everything. And nobody really feels obviously sorry for Al-Shabaab and their deaths. But right. I don't think a lot of people have been asking questions on who actually, you know, who are the folks who are dying? Are they really just Al-Shabaab, or are there other civilians who had nothing to do with this?
People and that's more engaged in their lives in this country. To what degree is radicalization or fighting any recruitment toward it an issue in the community? There have been a couple of incidents in recent years, and NPR reported in 2016 that one in four of the more than 250 Americans who have tried to join ISIS are from Minnesota.
Yes. So there has been several issues. I think it started back in 2007 when Al-Shabaab kind of started, and also when ISIS was at its peak in, I think, 2013, 2014. There were another wave of Somalis who tried to go. Some of them left. And the media, obviously, mainstream media talked a lot about that. But how big of an issue is it? You know, we are Somalis in America are, you know, said over 100,000 people, and the folks who left and the folks who are, you know, indicted are not more than, you know, 15 people. So, you know, you can tell that that's not really a big number. But also, you know, radicalization is obviously an issue. But it is, we need to think about what is causing this. Who are the people who left, and what was their stories? And I remember back in 2007 and 2008, I was a undergrad student at the University of Minnesota in the School of Journalism, and some of the folks I knew, at least two of the folks who left for Al-Shabaab to fight in Somalia. And, you know, those are young people who spend a lot more time in the U.S. and didn't know anything about Somalia. And, but I remember one of the, you know, one of them, I took several classes with him. Mm-hmm. And, so one of them was communication. So we would, you know, a class of communication class, and we had to deliver or do, you know, speeches, right, as part of our assignments. And one of the talks that he would talk about is police brutality, discrimination, you know, and all the things that Black folks are going through in America, especially, and if you are in Minneapolis, you would know that. So these people are disconnected, you know, from the obviously American community. They're also disconnected from the Somali community. Some of them came here when they were just a couple of months or a couple of years old. So when they are in their 20s, they are more Americans than they are Somalis. But at the same time, Americans see them as Somalis, not Americans. Yes. And Somalis see them as Americans, not Somalis. So they're kind of lost in the middle. So, I mean, I think those are the kind of issues that we need to look at. In my opinion, I don't think, you know, radicalization in terms of religion is really huge. It's just people who are confused, people who don't know, who are lost in the middle, who are kind of facing a lot of issues, both racism from both sides, and they wanted people to identify with. I mean, so that's why some of them are going to gang members, some of them are leaving homes, some of them are just joining these other groups. So for them, it's not necessarily about religious. It's more of, hey, I don't have anything to do in here. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I want to join some group. And this is a group that I probably think are powerful now that could host me in a way.
I understand. Yep. We're almost out of time. To the caller, Bakari's other question, I realize you report more on your community, not so much international affairs, or maybe not at all. But he asked, was the U.S. military invited into Somalia, or did they just go on this recent year's bombing campaign against al-Shabaab?
That's an interesting question, and I don't really know. I mean, I know that when it comes to, you know, there are other military based in Somalia. You know, African Union military is in Somalia, and those were invited by the U.S., by the Somali government. But with air strikes, I really don't know. That's something that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
We will have to leave it there with Ibrahim Hirsi. He was a reporter with the Minnesota-based news website, Min Post, and is now a PhD student in American history at the University of Minnesota. We really, really appreciate all the descriptions and context that you've given us about this community that is not well known, certainly in the New York area. What's next for you? You're in journalism. Now yeah. You're getting a PhD in history. What do you want to do with it?
Yeah, so I have been in journalism, and I'm still kind of doing some work for Public Radio International now on the side. So I've been doing journalism for some time, and when, you know, the election of Donald Trump came, I sat down at a different panel discussions, and I realized there was a lot of need for understanding the history of immigration, because a lot of the stuff that's happening to the Somali community also happened to the Irish community and to Italians and to Japanese and to Chinese. You know, we talk about the travel ban now, but there was the executive protocol, Chinese executive exclusion act, you know, similar things that where Asians were not allowed to be here. So I realized I probably need to go back to educate myself a little bit more about immigration issues so that I can be a better reporter and better writer in the future. So I'm hoping to, after my PhD, to do some sort of writings and reporting on bigger issues that right. needs to be explored in a way that isn't explored right now.
That's great. One of the best things, in my opinion, that any journalist can do is study history.
That's right.
So that's awesome. Ibrahim mm-hmm. Hirsi, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.